So we're Lucky Michaels in Oklahoma, spreading the word. Now we can all go there. Except for, I guess I'm calling this sort of the family part more now. Except for Frank and Jean's beloved daughter Jo, the next generation is all male, including Donna's three sons, John, William, and Robert Childers, and along with Jeffrey, his other son, Tony. These boys, or men, as I guess they are, they're all grown up with their own children, each loved and were loved by Frank and have their own stories to tell about growing up and with him. So you will next hear in order from John, Billy, and Bobby, I'm afraid that's what I call them, and lastly from his beloved son, Tony. But I was going to suggest that maybe you guys all want to come up together because there's room up here and then you're all here and you can hold on.
Begin to shift from a thing-oriented society to to a people-oriented society. We can no longer afford to worship the god of hate and bow before the altar of retaliation. History is cluttered with the wreckage of nations and individuals that pursued the self-defeating path of hate. As Arnold Toynbee says, love is the ultimate force that makes for the serving choice of life and good against the damaged choice of death and evil. Therefore, our first hope in our inventory must be the hope that love is going to have the last word. Frank was such a loving man. Frank was a great American spirit. I loved him, and I'm proud to be his son. Thank you. Hearing everybody talk just floods me with emotion of what a wonderful person Frank was. It's difficult for me to find the words to express the amount of love and admiration I have for Frank. He became my stepdad the summer I turned 10 and was kind, loving, and thoughtful towards me and my brothers. At night, he would scratch our backs before we went to sleep. He would swim and body surf with us in the ocean. He played a mean game of ping pong, and he would eat my Brussels sprouts when my mother was not looking. He was a Laker fan, and he loved dogs. Hearing Frank speak was a moving experience. From the power and conviction of his delivery to the truth of his message, he inspired me deeply. With passion, he cried for justice, equality, and fairness. He worked relentlessly to defend our constitutional freedoms and promoted social changes. He preached nonviolence. The noble ideals and values expressed in Frank's speeches were embodied in how Frank conducted his life. Frank set a wonderful example for us all. He was unconditionally fair, honest, and the most ethical man I've known. He was never mean, violent, or uncaring. Unlike those who claim to be part of a moral majority, Frank lived his life by the highest moral standards. Frank would often tell us stories and experiences of the time he spent traveling in Europe, riding his bike and hitchhiking through North Africa and Europe in 1936 and 37. We never heard stories of fancy hotels, parties, or beautiful palaces that he visited. His stories were always about the poor people he lived and ate with. He talked about the tremendous poverty he saw and the injustices people had to endure. He cared about people and dedicated his life to helping others. Frank had a tremendous passion for his own work, and he was always eager to discuss them with others. However, in all the years I knew Frank and lived with him, he never started a conversation by talking about himself or his work. The first thing out of his mouth was, "How are you?" He would always inquire about my work, my children, and my life. I felt his love and will miss him dearly. Thank you.
Frank, or Choo Choo, as my brothers have mentioned before, we would call him. I'm gonna miss him a lot. Good afternoon, friends and family, and those people that he stayed with, I call them your special friends, because you are very special. I'm the youngest son. Frank knew Los Angeles, California, inside and out. He loved this city, the Los Angeles Times. I remember he'd always write up the newspaper. He'd take the front page, I'd get the sports page. He was sitting on my chair every morning. Learning to drive with Frank in the fabulous Forum parking lot was a thrill for me. He knew knew all the side streets better than the Thomas Guide, and I believe that MapQuest consulted him in designing its software. Frank never really wanted to go to the amusement park, but if you wanted to ride a roller coaster, if you wanted a roller coaster to ride, all you needed to do was ride in the passenger seat of his car. Especially with going up Berea Avenue right by the Baldwin Hills Theater, on the right-hand side where the cars parked, it was quite fun sometimes. I thank Frank for passing on his great letter-writing skills as a boy who loves sports, especially basketball. And the Lakers. I think the game at the Fourth Avenue Forum happened to be free basketball night. I had mine stolen when I went to the restroom. Frank Loke wrote Laker management regarding the theft, and I had new basketball within days. I was looking for mementos about Frank when I came across the fieldwork summary. The year was 1995 to 96. It stated that Frank traveled 160 days in 21 states, 56 cities, 191 presentations, an unlimited amount of airline blankets were had. For those of you that have had an opportunity to snuggle up on the patio at Donna and Frank's house, you know he would like to share them. Frank was 82 in 1995, the same year he retired from mowing the lawn at 5606 Heatherdale Drive. I was sure glad Frank retired from something, but I'm still using a Sears Craftsman lawnmower to this day. Thanks, Frank, for the memories, the stories, especially your trip to Europe, the love and the knowledge that you have passed on to me, my family, and all of us. Thanks, Frank, for being such a gentleman to my mom. I'm sure Donna appreciated all the pretend gold stars he would give her for me, well prepared. I'll miss you, Frank.
I like to think that Frank is present, that he's here with us. And if he is, I think he's happy and surprised and disappointed. Happy to see us all gathered here and surprised because he really wasn't expecting an acting life. And disappointed, really disappointed, because he's not the one speaking. I appreciate all that. It's very helpful. Thank you. But we all know his voice. That voice that starts off quietly, sometimes with a joke, and it grows with urgency, passion, straining. We all know that voice. We all know his story. Been moved and sometimes bored. That story told over and over, almost biblical. And that pounding voice. For me as a little boy, that big, powerful voice coming down from the podium had an impact on me, physical and emotional, even though I didn't always understand what he was talking about. It was clear there was a battle raging. He had another quieter voice. On the nights he was not out of town or at a meeting, he would rub our backs and in a soft, gentle whisper, sing a lullaby, but always a lullaby with a message. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night. As alive as you and me. But and together we would say goodnight to the moon and the stars and the children of the world. There were other voices in our childhood. The Weavers, Paul Robeson, Earl Robinson, music and words woven into our hearts, strengthened us. It gave us a sense of what building a better world meant. It helped us to begin to understand what our parents were trying to do. Voices of song that made us want to lean into the struggle instead of pull away. We knew we were for peace and against war, integration, not segregation. We were for quality, integrated public housing. We were for the miners and not the mine owners. But I knew all this, but I had never met a miner. And we lived a basically segregated life. When I was small enough to curl up and sleep in the back window of our car, I liked to cling to my father's neck like a little monkey. When he was driving, I'd sit behind him and wrap my arms around his neck. For me as a child, the only way to get in under his words, to get in close, past the armor of his mission or his story, was with my arms. Sometimes that gap was too great, and sometimes it was beyond my reach. I had watched him preparing for a meeting, emerging from his shower. He had gone from a naked man, layer by layer, starched white shirt, cufflinks, suit and tie, tight shiny shoes, till he disappeared behind his clothes. This funny, silly, loving, deaf man, my father, was ready for battle. Driving to the meeting where he was going to speak, he became grim and silent. I would sit back in my seat. No one spoke, no one joked, no messing around. For Frank, the battle was in the marketplace of ideas. He was nourished by the struggle to reach and move people. He talked with anyone and everyone, often to our embarrassment. He was always ready to talk to a waiter, the dry cleaners, the toll taker. Hello, I'm Frank Wilkinson from City Limits. He was always trying to push the circle wider, never content with preaching to the choir. He lived a life of speaking tours. We shared our father with the rest of the country. So many familiar, loving faces, so many strangers who would look down on me and say, "You must be very proud of your father." Are you now, or have you ever been? Even now, there's still power in that simple question, yes or no. 50 years ago, that simple question destroyed lives, wiped out careers, broke up families, and tore friendships apart. It was something you could not hide from your children. We knew our phone was tapped. We knew about the phone calls of silence from the funny man. We knew about the parked cars with men in suits. There were newspapers thrown against our front door with photos of our mother, Jean, and her friends, fellow Los Angeles school teachers, covering their faces from the flashbulbs. Their crime, sending letters of support of Frank, protesting his dismissal from the Los Angeles Housing Authority. Our mother, Jean, was fired and accused of sowing the dragon seeds of treason in the classroom. William Randolph Hearst wrote an editorial praising the judge for her dismissal and standing up against the communist infiltration of America's classrooms. Later, we heard the explosion of a firebomb on our front steps. We saw the painted swastika. We knew about the death threats. One that was signed warned Frank to make your final preparations. The response from the LA County Sheriff was, "It's not a threat. That's just good advice." It was frightening and confusing as a child. I remember watching an episode of I Led Three Lives, where a scary woman named Comrade Wilkinson crept up the stairs to the attic, while the hero, Philbrick, an undercover FBI agent, was desperately trying to memorize names. I remember thinking, "Comrade Wilkinson, is that supposed to be my mother?" The only way Jeff and I could go to the YMCA summer camp at Little Green Valley was if our parents agreed not to come and visit us. When I got there, one of our cabin mates was a boy named Conrad. I couldn't believe it. I thought I had problems. I remember thinking, how could his parents make him go through life with the name Conrad? Our mother and father were brave. They were courageous, and that bravery helped to keep us whole and secure. They fought back, and they helped others fight back. They helped people overcome their fears, and they in turn were sustained by the courage and sacrifice of their family and friends and strangers throughout the country. In a way, we lived in the eye of the hurricane. We were embraced by a movement. But there were many people, like Frank's brother and sisters, who took a stand without the support of a movement. They put everything on the line, they risked it all, for love and a deep sense of patriotism. They were Republicans who believed in the Bill of Rights and freedom of speech. My Aunt Hildegard Roxana June Wilkinson was the first woman elected to Chief of Staff at Glendale Memorial Hospital. In 1961, at Thanksgiving, she announced on the loudspeaker of the hospital, "This is Dr. Wilkinson speaking. I will be away from the hospital for approximately 1 week. I'm going to visit my brother, who is in a federal penitentiary for exercising his First Amendment rights." They never wavered, and in many ways, this is why McCarthyism was defeated. Because people like my uncle and aunts refused to be stampeded by fear and hysteria. It is these individual, small but powerful, everyday choices, these personal acts of resistance, that together change history. And the truth is, the FBI didn't fear my father because he was a communist. It did not matter whether he was or he wasn't. It did not matter who he was. What mattered was who he was talking to, and who was listening, and who was being moved by his words. What they really feared were the people he was talking to. He was dangerous because he knew that people, regular, everyday people, even Republicans, given a clear choice, would respond and would break through their fear. It still amazes me the amount of time, money, and resources the FBI spent following Frank and how little they knew. An FBI file seven stories high, 132,000 pages, and they didn't know that Frank had a built-in lie detector. When we were little, we discovered that if our father said something that wasn't true, his hearing aid would let out a loud squeal. They really didn't know who Frank was. He was a snuggler, a cuddler, an affectionate, loving, and gentle man. He was a chocoholic, who ate raw salted onions like they were apples, and who liked sweet pickles and drank the juice. Loved Bob's Big Boys and Gin and Tonics and Benny Goodman. I was with him in his last week, this big man, my papa, who used to carry me from the car asleep in my arms, who was now so much smaller. My father, who had sung to us and comforted us, was struggling to find his comfort and rest. It's hard to let go, hard to lie silent when you've lived to speak. The night before he died, we played him a song my sister Jo wrote, a lullaby. I want to sail on an ocean of love. It was a wonderful moment. Awards and plaques and family photos filling the wall above him. Above him, a picture of Hildegard, his oldest sister, who had been like a mother to him, smiling down on him. He had lived a full life, really several full lives. He had, with thousands of others, helped to create this ocean of love that sustained us and carried us all up and over our fears.